for our I want to thank the Burmington Institute for giving me the opportunity to speak here and for your hospitality. The title of my talk is the title of my talk is String Creation and Effective Field Theory. This is the outline of my talk. First, I will give a brief review of the string creation effect, which occurs in a particular configuration of brain, which I will elaborate shortly. Then, I will look at the low-energy effective field theory that captures the string creation effect. Since we're looking at some interactions between brains, so the most natural way to look at it is from the open string point of view, where the deep brains are treated as boundaries, where the strings end. And I will look at the effective field theory of the open string from the open string point of view, as it will be clear, this is the string creation effect is a one loop open string effect which could be readily mapped to a closed string tree level exchange between the brains. So we will look at the corresponding description, effective field theory description from the closed string point of view. Along the way, we'll find that it is very convenient to introduce the so-called office gauge, which is some kind of light cone gauge, which will be very useful in describing our brain configuration. And we'll look at the implied duality relation, which is crucial to understanding the string creation effect from the closed string point of view. Finally, I will give a summary and conclusion. To begin with, let us look at a supersymmetric configuration of brains. Deep brains are half BPS objects which preserve half of the supersymmetry. So in general, if we have more than a stack of brain, they will break all the supersymmetries unless the brains are arranged in special configurations. Namely, that the number of relatively transverse dimensions, number of dimensions which are longitudinal to one set of brain and orthogonal to the other, is equal to a multiple of 4. Let us consider a particular example of this kind of supersymmetric configuration of brains, namely the D0, D8 system. In this case, the D8 brain is stretched along x0 to x8, and the D0 brain is stretched only along the time direction, x0. And the two set of brains are separated along x9 with a distance L. Let us consider wrapping the D8 brain on an 8 sphere. D0 and D8 are sources of Ramond-Ramond potentials, namely this 1-point potential and 9-point potential respectively. If you look at the equations of motion of the Navier-Schwarz 2-form flux in type 2A theory, we realize that in the presence of the D0 and the D8 brain, there is a non-trivial induced Navier-Schwarz 2-form flux. So it's considered now, taking the D0 brain, pushing it inside the 8 sphere, there would be a non-trivial induced Navier-Schwarz 2-form flux on the 8th sphere. And this is not consistent with Gauss's theorem because the 8th sphere is a compact surface. In order to make sense of that, it was first proposed by Hanani and Witten in a related system that what really happens is that as you take the D0 brain across the D8 brain, a string must have been created in the process, which connects the D0 and D8. A string is also a source of the Navier-Schwarz 2-form flux. And so by creating a string, it can cancel the flux induced on the 8th sphere, and so making it consistent with Gauss's theorem. This argument holds even in the decompactification limit, where the radius of the sphere is taken to be arbitrarily large. And this argument is also true for many other related brain configuration, namely other brain configuration also with 8 relatively transverse dimensions and with 1 totally transverse dimension, such as the D1, D7, D2, D6, D3, D5, D4, D4, and so on. Since this involves the string creation effect, clearly is some kind of interaction between the two stacks of brains. And so the most natural way to look at the effective field theory would be to consider
open string, the effective low energy effective field theory of open strings. And in order that the deep brains can feel the presence of each other, we would look at, in particular, open strings that are stretched between the D0 and the D8. But the ground state of these stretched strains turns out to be a single fermion without a bosonic partner. And the low energy effective action that describes this configuration is given by the so-called 0-8 quantum mechanics, where there are 8 supersymmetries. The notation also tells us that this theory can be obtained from a 1+1 dimensional chiral theory, thus explaining the notation of the bracket 0-8. It's a chiral theory in 2 dimensions. And if we look at the part of the action describing this stretch strain, and forgetting for the moment the gauge kinetic terms on the d0 and the d8 plane, it is given by this expression here. L parameterizes the separation between the d brains, and A is the difference between the gauge field on the 0 and the 8 brain. Now, we're interested in the effective potential between the interact potential between the brains. So let us consider integrating out the contribution of this fermion. By integrating out this fermion, this is really the Born-Oppenheimer approximation. And the resultant effective potential is given by this expression here. The Born-Oppenheimer approximation really means that this effective potential can be interpreted as the vacuum energy of a free harmonic oscillator, free fermionic harmonic oscillator with natural frequency given by A plus L. The coefficient 1/2 here turns out to be very important, because if we look at the path integral, we realize immediately that upon a gauge large gauge transformation shifting A by 2 pi, the effective path integral gains a non-trivial phase factor. And this is not consistent with gauge invariance of the theory. Also, this theory is clearly not consistent with supersymmetry, because the effective potential has an explicit dependence on the gauge separation. And that means the fields, the brains, are feeling non-trivial forces between them. In fact, in our normalization, this force is exactly given by string tension multiplied the string tension. So it was first proposed by Seiberg, Banks, and Silberstein that in order to make the effective theory consistent with gauge invariance, one should consider adding into the Lagrangian a so-called bare Chern-Simons term given in this form. It comes in this combination A0 plus L, because this combination is invariant under the 0-8 supersymmetries. Also, the coefficient can be any half integers, and that would automatically combine with the one loop term that we have in the previous slide to give an integer coefficient in front of the A0 term, thus making it consistent with gauge invariance. However, let us consider in particular that the coefficient is given by 1/2. In such a case, suppose the D0 brain is first taken on the left-hand side of the D8 brain, where L is negative. Then it would combine with the effective potential term that we see in the previous slide, and the two terms would cancel. And so we get a 0 potential on the left-hand side. Now, if we take the D0 brain across the D8 brain, L would change sign here. And instead, it would combine with the effective potential one loop term and give a contribution of exactly L. And in our notation, in our normalization, that is exactly given by the string tension multiplied by the brain separation. Therefore, there is a jump in the potential as the D0 crosses the D8. But by conservation of energy, it really means that this jump must have been cancelled by a creation of a strain when the D0 crosses the D8. Therefore, the bare term with a coefficient 1/2 is exactly what we need to capture the strain creation effect in this open strain effective field theory. The next question, however, is that where does the bare term come from? it is very unnatural to be adding terms into the effective Lagrangian by hand in string theory. And so it means that we must have missed something when we calculated the effective one-loop potential in the effective field theory when we integrated our fermion. In order to see what we have missed, let us look at more formal string theory techniques. Sorry.
It's a hockey stick if you need a pointer. I'm sorry that I didn't mention this. So.
Let us try to use more formal string theory techniques to repeat the calculation for the effective potential. In fact, it is a one-loop potential because it is one-loop excited, the theory is free. Then the effective potential in open string theory is simply given by this expression. But this expression is actually exactly what we would be doing in any effective field theory calculation. This is a one-loop calculation, and we have only rearranged the free field propagator 1 over p squared minus m squared in terms of the worksheet Virasoro operators. Also, the integral over the loop momentum is replaced by this integral over t, which is the string of parameters. So everything here, so-called doing in formal open string theory, is completely identical to what we would expect in an effective field theory. The true input of string theory here is this field content that is circulated inside the loop, and that is captured by the trace over the off states in the Ramon and the Navier-Schultz sector. Here, these are the GSO projectors, and F0 and is the worksheet fermion number, and G0 is the worksheet superghost number. These superghosts, beta gamma superghosts, are needed for gauge fixing local worksheet supersymmetry on string worksheets. And gamma NS and gamma R are the gamma matrices formed from the string worksheet fermionic zero modes. Is there a question? Okay, so now let us try to evaluate this expression explicitly. This term is zero because of the trace over the gamma matrix. And all the excited states in the Navier-Schultz sector in this term are in this trace, and the excited states in the Ramon sector here are completely canceled out. This is what this is a result of supersymmetries where all the bosonic states cancel with the fermionic states. And so at the end of the day, we're left with the ground state fermion in the Ramon sector. And this gives this contributes to this term here. This is exactly what we have already found in the effective one-loop calculation. But then there is an unexpected contribution also from this term. The reason is that even though there is also a trace over the gamma matrix, which naively should give zero, in the Ramon sector, we've also got an infinite number of beta gamma ghost zero states. And when we trace over them in the Ramon sector, it actually gives a divergent result. And if we regularize it carefully, we find that the divergence cancels with the zero of the gamma matrix, and it gives rise to a non-trivial potential here. The ambiguity in the sign comes from the fact that under a parity transformation, the gamma matrix also changes signs. And so a parity transformation, which a parity transformation really means we are swapping the position of the D0 and the D8 frame. So this is exactly the beta that we are looking for, which is given in the open string theory calculation. But now, the point is, every state in our string theory corresponds to states in effective field theory. And this is true even in the ghost sector. So the open string theory calculation is telling us that we are missing this ghost contribution in effective field theory, and we should be putting them back in. These are beta gamma superghosts, and so by putting in beta gamma superghosts, it really means that the effective field theory possesses local world line supersymmetry. Let us now look more carefully at this trace here. This trace here, and look in particular at all the zero modes. We try to express them in explicitly as GSO projected states to have a better idea of what the form of the ghost states are actually circulating in the loop.
and rearranging the trace, this is the final expression. Here, we have replaced minus 1 to the g by x to the g so as to keep track of the ghost number of each state that is contributing. The up and down arrows are the two degenerate fermionic ground states, and they fall into spin representation in 1 plus 1 dimension with opposite chirality. So the ground state corresponds to n equals 0, and that is the only physical state in this trace, and that gives rise to 1 over mod L, the one loop effective potential that we have seen before. And the bare term came from the cancellation between these two infinite tau of states with opposite chirality in 1 plus 1 dimensions with non-zero ghost number. So now, having seen clearly what these states are, let us try to look at the effective field theory that should describe them. As I mentioned before, since we have these powers of infinite ghost states, we should be coupling our effective field theory to local world line supersymmetry. Yes?
Why don't you have the same problem when the number of non-integration iteration is 4?
The same problem. The reason is that if you look at number of where there are only 4 relatively transverse dimensions, you actually get more fermionic zero modes. You have more of them in the remote cycle. And so when you trace over the gamma R matrix, it is it has higher order in the zero has higher order than the vanishing than the divergent components. Therefore, it doesn't occur. Yes. And in the previous slide, we've also seen that the trace overall ghost involves 2 towers of ghosts with opposite chirality. And that means, in effective field theory, we should be coupling the theory to 2 sets of local worldwide supersymmetries. Also, this open string theory calculation actually tells us something about the form of the ghost action that we should expect for these 2 towers of ghosts. Namely, that's given that they have 2 opposite two chiralities, we get some plus and minus sign here, and that these ghosts should have the same mass and gauge coupling as the ground state
fermionic string that is stretched between the D0 and D8 frame. And so this gives us the form of the ghost action. But now, the differential operator sandwiched between the super ghosts actually is related to the supersymmetry generator of the local of the gravitini on the world line. And so by staring at the ghost action, we realize that this local world line supersymmetry we are looking at should look something like a gauged supergravity, precisely because of these terms. So gathering these elements, what I try to do is to use explicit superspace techniques to construct an action that possesses 2 sets of local worldline supersymmetries with opposite chiralities. Upon gauge fixing, the action reduces to the effective action of the ground state fermion. And in addition, I also got the ghost action precisely as predicted as in open string theory. So now, at least in the open string picture, we have a consistent view of where the of the string creation effect. Namely, that we should have coupled the effective field theory to local world line supersymmetry. Automatically, that gives us the bare term that captures the string creation effect. And in addition, it dictates that the coefficient has the correct coefficient to be 1/2, which is what we need to capture the string creation effect. And so, the understanding in the open string picture is quite complete. Now, as we have seen, the bare term and the effective interaction between the D-brains is actually an open string one-loop effect. So this can be readily mapped to a string tree-level exchange between the D-brains. Now, so we can consider, again, to look at the effective potential between the D-brains in the cold string picture.
up to tree level, which is classical. And that is most readily done by considering the dpi action of the dp brain in the curved background generated by the d8 minus p brain. And the effective potential would be given by this expression here, which is not complete. There's some problem with the display, and which is given by this expression here. This is the dpi action. We simply substitute in the effective, the metric and the dilaton of the background corresponding to the D8 minus D brain, which is a D8 brain that we're considering here, into the DBI action. And we also take the static gauge for the DP brain or D0 brain. And evaluating explicitly, it is given by this expression. This is the effective potential, where we have switched off all world volume of excitations on the D0 brain. So R is the number of relatively transverse dimensions, T is the membrane tension, and H is the harmonic function corresponding to the curved background generated by the D8 brain. Here, we expect that this term, the Trans-Simons term involving the Ramon-Ramon fields, do not contribute at all, because the D0 and the D8 brain are supposedly coupled to different Ramon-Ramon fields, and in the absence of any world volume flux, it should not contribute. And so we are left with this expression, which is a contribution coming only from the dilaton and the background metric. So this corresponds to exchange of dilaton and graviton between the two D brains. And if we evaluate it explicitly for the D0 and D8 brain, we see immediately that there is a non-trivial effective potential between the D brain. In fact, it is given exactly by 1/2 the string tension multiplied by the brain separation. This is in complete agreement in the open string picture, except the bare term is missing. The brains are feeling a non-trivial force between each other in the naive DBI analysis. So our task would be to find out where the bare term has gone in the cold string picture. But before that, let us try to lift the brain configuration to M theory to see if M theory has any better idea of where the bare term has gone. However, we haven't got an interpretation of the D8 brain in M theory. So let us look instead at the related system of the D2 and the D6 brain, which could be readily lifted to M theory. The D6 brain is aligned along X0 to X6. And in M theory, it is described by the Kaluza-Klein monopole. The curve metric produced by the Kaluza-Klein monopole is given by the Taubner metric. The D2 brain is stretched along X7 and X8. And in M theory, it becomes the membrane. And supersymmetric solutions of membranes in the Taubner background has been solved by Yoshida and Barkas and Green. To describe a single membrane in this curved background, it is given by a curve up to linear order, a complex curve, up to linear order in the complex coordinates y and v. And so we get two families of such curves parameterized by a real constant v. Here v is given by x7 plus ixk, and y is related to the x coordinates by this complex expression. But this is, the choice of these complex coordinates are completely dictated by the complex structure of the Taubner space. And so, and that is to preserve supersymmetry. And we have rescaled R11 to 1 here. Let us in particular look at the plot of the at membrane in the YB plane, in the X9B plane, to see what happens there. And it focuses
in the middle of the transparency mode.
Which type of?
Well, in one equation you have the V in the next.
Yes, because this is up to linear order in V, so there are exactly two such solutions.
Okay.
One without V. Yes, and for concreteness, let us look at the second equation. So we plot the membrane, the form of the membrane in the X9B plane. And in this picture, the Kaluza-Klein monopole is situated at the origin. When B is less than 0, we find that the membrane is only mildly curved.
And asymptotic x9 position is really given by B. So B parameterizes the brain separation. As we take B towards the origin, in fact, crossing the origin, we find that the membrane becomes increasingly curved. And until B crosses the origin, after B crosses the origin, the asymptotic x9 position of the membrane continues to be given by B. But now we find that there's something interesting happening here. The membrane gets hooked up at the origin by the calcified monopole. And this protruding region wraps around the x11 dimension. So from the point of view of type 2A theory, a membrane wrapping around x11 direction is precisely a fundamental strain. Therefore, this set of membrane solutions capture the strain creation effect. In fact, to confirm our expectation, we zoom into this region and calculated the energy here, and it is given by the strain tension multiplied by the x9 separation, confirming our identification of this part as being really a fundamental strain. Let us, however, try to calculate the energy of this configuration. The energy of this brain is given by the membrane tension multiplied by the area of the brain in the curved vector. Due to the complex structure, the expression simplifies greatly, and we are left with this simple expression here. This part is trivial because this is really a flat membrane in a flat background. The curvature of the membrane and the background is given by this bit here. And the energy is infinite. But the force given by the derivative of the energy by the brain separation is a finite number. And in our normalization, it is given exactly by one half the strain tension. So what is
the acting force that you're using to calculate energy for an
entropy? The minus.
It seems like that looks like the action for a fundamental strain, but for an M2 brain, I thought there was a cosmological constant or something like that.
For the membrane?
Yeah.
Is there I'm looking only at the area of the membrane in the curved background, so I'm not exactly sure.
But then, don't you want to evaluate the action of the.
This is some BPS type problem.
This is only the membrane. Yes. And yes, what I was trying to say is this. The M theory calculation gives us
exactly what we have already obtained in the DBI analysis, namely that there is a force between the D brains. And that the force is given by
exactly one half the strain tension. And if the problem of having of not finding the beta persists in N theory, a final note is that this curve here is related to that the shape of this curve is related to that curve by a parity transformation, in which case the membrane would be hooked up by the on this side instead of that side. So they give really the same result. So not finding a solution in theory suggests that let us go back to more formal treatment in perturbative string theory to see if it has more to say about the problem. And in closed string theory, D-brains are described by boundary states. Boundary states are roughly coherent states of closed strings, satisfying these boundary conditions when they are acted upon by the worksheet fields. These are Neumann boundary conditions, and these are the Dirichlet boundary conditions. These conditions can be readily generalized to fermionic fields in the superstring theory. In order to calculate the effective potential between the D-brains, this can be done by sandwiching the closed string propagator between the corresponding boundary states that represents the D. This calculation between the interaction energy between the D0 and the D8 brain was first calculated by Vivacchio and company. And what they found is that there is a non-trivial contribution from the Nevershov sector corresponding to the exchange between the D-brains, the dilaton and the graviton. And that contribution gives precisely, again, 1/2 mod M. So it is in complete agreement with the naive DBF action that we have already had. But what is very surprising is that there is also a non-trivial contribution from the Ramon-Ramon sector. It means that the D0 and the D8 brain are actually exchanging Ramon-Ramon fields, even though naively, this contribution here should be zero because they should couple to different Ramon-Ramon fields. And in fact, this gives precisely the Bayer term. And the reason why this is non-vanishing in the whole string calculation of this boundary calculation is that, again, while we have some kind of zero from the trace over a gamma matrix, there is also a diverging contribution from the beta gamma supergroups, this time in the whole string theory. And it was interpreted by DiBacchio that this contribution arises from a non-zero overlap between the timeline component of the one-form Ramon-Ramon potential and the nine-form Ramon-Ramon potential. But this duality condition stated here is a complete disaster because the calculation that they did was in conformal gauge. And so all the expressions that you obtain in conformal gauge should be explicitly Lorentz invariant. But this clearly violates Lorentz invariant. And also, this involves some kind of definition of these Ramon-Ramon forms of mass shell in order to include, because in general, we can only represent the field strengths instead of the potentials. And so it is not entirely clear what this expression means. Clearly, this is not a good thing to be obtaining in the conformal gauge. And of course, this is also not gauge invariant. So in order to make better sense of the picture, we'd like to try to get rid of this super ghost, which is very confusing in the full string picture. And in order to get rid of super ghost, we would like to gauge fix the string action. So naively, when we try to gauge fix it in the Lycombe gauge. But the usual Lycombe gauge is incapable of describing the A grids. The reason is that the Lycombe gauge condition automatically implies that both the Lycombe directions x plus and x minus satisfies the Dirichlet boundary condition, whereas the D8 brain has only got one Dirichlet boundary condition and 8 Neumann boundary conditions. Therefore, we are introducing a new gauge here, which is a closed ring generalization of the Alvis gauge, which is widely known in our open string theory.
So could I ask a question about the regularization procedure that DeBakey and company use?
Sorry?
So the result that DeBakey and company get,
yes,
is that dependent on the regularization procedure that they use?
The regularization procedure.
Yes, there's some divergence.
I guess in some sense it does depend on the regularization. But the bottom line is if a non-trivial result in the Ramon-Ramon sector could only arise from because of the divergence of the beta gamma ghost. And I think that regularization is quite general. So there's what I'm trying to say is that there's definitely some interaction in the Ramon-Ramon channel. But the question is, what is that precisely? So here I try to get rid of the ghost and introduce the obfuscate. The idea of the obfuscate is quite simple. It really means that we are picking a different gauge choice for the left and right movers. We can the gauge conditions are summarized here, and we can compare it with the usual Lycombe gauge, where this condition is replaced by d minus x plus equals the other prime d plus. Now we can Fourier expand the Lycombe directions, and then express the Lycombe, the operators in the Lycombe direction in terms of the transverse excitations. Note here that these p plus and p minus are C numbers. They are the momenta of the string worksheet. And p minus hat and p plus hat, they are operators. The on-chair condition is given by setting p plus and minus hat equals to p plus and minus. So far, we have been working in a bosonic string theory. And we would like to generalize these gauge conditions to superstring theory. And in the RNS formula form, in the number short sector, it can be simply done by setting these components of the fermionic fields to zero. And in the remote mode sector, given the non-trivial zero modes of these components, we instead project onto the fermionic ground states by these gamma matrices. And note again that there is a not a symmetric choice in the gauge condition in left and right moving sector. Since we're describing the super configuration of frames, supersymmetric configurations of frames, it would be very convenient also to generalize the gauge choice to the green shots of formalism. And to do so, we again, as usual, introduce this worksheet superfields. And here, theta's the superspace, space time superspace coordinates. They are mile around about 16 components, mile around about spinners in 10 dimensions. And A runs from 1 to 2. Theta 1 and theta 2 have opposite chirality in type 2A theory and the same chirality in type 2B theory. And so the gauge conditions in the Green-Schwarz formalism are summarized here. And note again that we have a symmetric gauge choice projection onto theta 1 and theta 2. The ground state is, as usual, given by, in each chiral sector, it is given by an 8-component bosonic state falling into the vector representation in the transverse SO8 rotation. The fermionic states, again, we have 8 of them, and they fall into spinner representation of the transverse SO8 rotation. The chirality of these fermionic ground states, however, descends from theta 1 and theta 2, and also the gauge of projection onto theta 1 and theta 2. So let us look in particular in type 2A theory. The dilaton and the graviton, they are again given by the direct product of bosonic states in the left and right moving sector. But what is more interesting is this remote-remote potentials. They are given by the fermionic ground states, the direct product of the fermionic ground states in the right and left moving sector, contracted by these gamma matrices, which are part of the 8-dimensional derived matrices. And in type 2A theory, theta 1 and theta 2 have opposite chirality. But on the at the same time, we have an opposite gauge projection onto theta 1 and theta 2. As a result, these fermionic ground states in the left and right moving sector have the same chirality. And so the number of Lorentz indices that could be carried by this state has an even number. And this is not consistent with what we would expect in the usual type 2A theory, where all remote-remote forms are expected. And the same problem also arises in type 2B theory, where we obtain even forms instead of odd forms instead of even forms. So, in order to make sense of that, we interpret these states as the Lyapunov component of odd remote-remote forms in type 2A theory. With that interpretation, let us look at the Lyapunov component of a C1 form. That is given by M and N contracted to the identity matrix. Now, let us look also at the Lyapunov component of a C9 form. That is given by M and N contracted to the product of gamma 1 to gamma n. But these gamma matrices are gamma matrices in SO8. And so the product of gamma 1 to gamma 8 gives, again, the identity matrix. So we see explicitly in this other sketch that the one-form potential and the nine-form potential has a dual relationship. However, we are working in an explicit gauge choice. So as usual, in any light cone gauge, this kind of duality relationships are only a result of a particular gauge choice. And the underlying theory preserves Lorentz invariance. So at least in our calculation, we can believe that Lorentz invariance is preserved. And now we are ready to compute again the effective interaction between the D-brains. So first of all, we have to construct the boundary states in this gauge. And our gauge choice on the Lyapunov component automatically implies that the time direction satisfies Dirichlet boundary condition, and X9 satisfies Neumann boundary condition. So the other way around. The time direction satisfies Dirichlet boundary condition, and X9 satisfies Neumann boundary condition. Therefore, these boundary states that we are constructing, you Euclidean breadth. And this is what usually happens in any Lightcomb gauge fixed boundary theory. The boundary states is given explicitly by this expression, which exponentiates the creation operators in the bosonic and the fermionic sector. They are contracted by these matrices. And the serum of contributions to the boundary state is again given by the direct product of the bosonic ground state contracted by Tij also, plus the fermionic direct product of fermionic ground states in the left and right moving sector, contracted again by this matrices M. Therefore, if we look at the boundary state of a P plus 1 frame, we find that of a P frame, we find that the fermionic serial mode contributions to the boundary state has exactly the form of a P plus 1 form that we defined in previous slide. And this confirms our interpretation that these states are indeed P plus 1 Ramon 1 forms because they couple naturally to P grids. And now we are repeating the calculation for the effective interaction between the D rings. And again, we have the closed string propagator sandwiched between the corresponding boundary states of the central D rings. The closed string propagator is given by this expression. And it is really, again, rearranging the usual free field propagator, one of the P squared minus M squared, in terms of the world treat Virasoro generators.
And note also that the integral over Z enforces the level matching condition in the left and right moving cycle.
And so, evaluating using the explicit form of boundary state, putting it into this expression, we have explicitly the effective potential between the D-rings, and it is given by this expression. All the massive exchange between the D-rings are cancelled out in the Ramon and Eppershaw cycle. And we are left with only the massless exchange between the D-rings. The graviton and dilaton exchange, again, give rise to this term here. And this term came from the exchange of the fermionic, the product of fermionic serials, which are Ramon-Ramon potential. So we reproduce the bare term here. The ambiguity in the sign came from the fact that as we trace over all the fermionic serials, and as we do a parity transformation, the gauge condition on theta 1 and theta 2 are exchanged. And as a result, the trace of the chirality of the fermionic serial modes between the left and right moving sector are also exchanged. And so when we trace over these gamma matrices, we have a change in sign. And so in the gauge fixed formalism, we again reproduce the bare term that we were looking for. But there's actually various unsettled issues in this problem. One important problem that I haven't been able to make sense of is about the propagator that that is involved in the calculation of massless exchange between the fields, between the brands. The issue is, if we look at the Fourier expansion of the Lightcomb directions, we realize that the only way that the coefficient of the world sheet sigma coordinate to vanish is that both Oldshire conditions have to be satisfied at the same time. Now, by putting in a propagator between the brains, we are allowing the states to go off muscle. And in particular, in the P0D8 exchange, the strings that are exchanged between the D brains actually involve macroscopic stretching along the brain separation. So to be completely honest, I haven't been able to make sense of that. And so that definitely requires a more careful treatment. A second thing is that while we now can be quite sure that there should be an extra contribution to the linear action involving an exchange between the D0 and the A brain, Ramon-Ramon fields, it is not clear how to include this extra force in the linear action in a gauge invariant and Lorentz invariant manner. Namely, it is not clear how to modify the transcendence terms here such that it preserves Lorentz. But For example, the most naive thing that I have thought of involves taking the Hodge real of the C9 potential. But if you try that, you'll find that you are unable to contract all the Lorentz indices, including the Lorentz invariants. And also, finally, we are still needing an interpretation of this extra interaction in M theory. The issue is, if you look at again the D2D6 frame system in M theory, this extra interaction in the remote-remote sector would correspond to the Kaluza-Klein monopole, coupling also to the three-form potential, and that clearly requires an interpretation. To summarize, I have revealed the string creation effect, which is a result only of Gauss's law. To describe the string creation effect using an effective field theory, we realize that it crucially depends on the existence of a so-called bad term. In the open string picture, the bad term arises as a result of worldwide coupling effective field theory to local worldwide supersymmetry. In the closed string theory, it involves a non-trivial exchange between the deep planes in the remote sector, which is captured by some kind of duality relationship in a particular gauge fixed calculation. But there are, as we have looked at, unsettled issues in our understanding, namely that we should understand how the DBI action could be modified, and we should find a consistent interpretation in end theory. Thank you.
Any questions for the speaker? Thank you again.